Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
And thank you for attending the workshop. I'm a little nervous. I was told I'm actually recording this for their podcast. So they felt that this workshop was very relevant and important to substance abuse. So, and I don't have a clicker, so I'll come in here and move in this. Okay. So one of the things that I want to do today, and I'm going to try to balance my time because I really want to do a case study with you as well. I'm going to talk to you about working with substance abuse, which many of you probably already have the experience in working with substance abuse, and looking at some spirituality-based perspectives. Also talking about understanding the client-worker relationship and what we as providers bring to the context of working with clients who are addressing substance abuse, and how do you introduce spirituality in that context? But what I wanted to also do is look at the FICA spirituality assessment, and this is an assessment that was developed by physicians that was used primarily at end of life and to assess a person's will to live. And so in looking at that particular assessment, I felt like thank you very much. I felt like the FICA assessment would be a really good assessment as a way to introduce talking about spirituality and making it comfortable for our clients to be able to bring that topic up. So I want to talk to you about that today. Thank you so much. Okay, so let's see if this is... Are we connected? It should. It's probably, let's see. Oh, maybe I'm clicking. Oh, did I turn it on? Maybe I didn't turn it on. Okay.
Sorry.
I'm going to work with it. Nope, it's okay.
It
turned.
Oh, there we go. It's working now. Thank you. Thank you so much. So I wanted to start off with spirituality. And there are a lot of definitions around what spirituality is. Most people relate spirituality to religion. And spirituality is different. It has different meanings for different people. And so I looked at two. And so the two that jumped out at me was one by Blakely, where individuals' beliefs, faith in, and personal relationship with God / a higher being or higher power that transcends human limitations. And the reason why I looked at these two in particular is because when you think about substance abuse, the 12-step programs, right? They talk about the context of a higher power. Tursky looks at it from a spiritual life includes the ability of a person to be responsible, to be trusting, to achieve a deeper level of intimacy, and realize his or her own personal growth. And oftentimes when a person is coming in for substance abuse counseling or substance abuse treatment, they've reached their bottom. Right? So the bottom. So they're literally starting over. And how do we as providers help them to move into a space? And so understanding what spirituality is for your client is what's important, not for you. Right? We oftentimes have our own definition of what we believe spirituality is, and we'll give that to the client and not really understand what their context of spirituality is. And that's where the FICA assessment really works well. So when we look at spirituality, it's understanding what does it do for our clients, right? It promotes, it gives them a purpose of existence. Oftentimes, depending on how and why a person came into a space where they're abusing substances can play a part in their purpose. If you have a person who is self-medicating as a way to deal with trauma, who is self-medicating because it was introduced to them very early in their lives, most times by the time they come into treatment, they really don't feel like they have a purpose for existence. And so the whole idea about getting better and what it means in the context of existence is lost. It's a way to better oneself. And these are things that we would want to translate to our clients as we talk to them. We have to understand that these are not things that are going to happen right away. And sometimes as providers, we are excited about a person who even made a decision to come into treatment that we sometimes will move to this space before taking the necessary steps to go forward. It helps to build self-esteem. It also helps in delaying gratification. For an individual who is in a place where they may be abusing substances, oftentimes is to meet an immediate need. It is to quell pain. It is to move away from things that may have been traumatic, or to even take a space to where you're trying to forget those things. But the most important piece also too is to have the person think about the long-term consequences of their actions, right? So in substance abuse, one of the things oftentimes that you'll see, they talk about consequential thinking and the context of understanding that the decisions that you make oftentimes are going to have consequences that come along with them. So when we look at spirituality, these are all of the things that spirituality can help to promote when we're working with clients who are addressing substance abuse. Okay, so the helper, who's that? Right? We are the helpers. And oftentimes, that's what we come in with this big hat on, right? We are the helpers. I'm going to save you. And here's the thing that we have to understand. Each person in this room, you have to ask yourself, why did you come into this profession? Why did you choose to be a social worker? Why did you choose to be a counselor? Sometimes it's either connected to you directly or indirectly based on your own experiences. So we have to be very careful and mindful of the role that we're playing when we talk about helper. And I'm going to go into depth around what we need to bring and what we need to be conscious of. So as the helper, the social worker, the counselor, your role, understand what your role is to foster the client's journey to recovery. Right? So it's not for you to drag them through, but it's for you to guide them through that process. They're not going to move as fast as you think they should. They're not going to move as fast as you want them to. So you have to meet the client where they are. But in our own zealous sometimes, you're going to do this. We're going to get you through this 18-month program. You're going to get a job, and you're going to find a place to live, and you're going to, right? 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 So part of that is, think about it. I always look at it as a journey, and that's how I explain it to my clients. You are about to embark on a journey, and I am your guide. I'm not going to pull you through this. We're going to go through this at your pace, but also explain it to them based on why they may be in treatment, because some people are in treatment involuntarily, right? But and explaining the guidelines, right? So I'm going to help you through this journey, but we have to explore the guidelines, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about that. So you have to establish very clear boundaries at the start, and it's important to maintaining that relationship, whether it's therapeutic or whatever. If you don't establish boundaries, it'll get away from you. Your clients are not your friends. They are sharing very intimate things about them. And so you as a professional have to be very careful of compassion fatigue, right? Internalizing and finding your own way to purge a lot of this information that you're getting when you walk out the door. And I'll talk to you about some of the things that I do as a way to help me with that. So also, it's the provider's responsibility to keep the process realistic for the client and yourself. Because oftentimes our clients will come in, and especially if they're mandated, they already see themselves leaving. All right, so I got to be here for how many months?
Right.
I got, what, 12 months? All right, so by the time we get to month 3, this is what I'm going to be doing. You have to keep them grounded. Keep them realistic in the context of, you know what, by month 3, you may not be in that space. And here's the thing, although you being mandated for 12 months, you have to really think about what happens after the 12 months, right? Right? The key is encouraging the client to express their feelings and use their coping skills. Now, I always find this is the biggest challenge. The person's coming in, a mandated, I don't want to be here, I don't trust you, you're against me, everyone's against me, and if I don't do what I'm supposed to do, you're going to make me go back to jail, right? So part of that is encouragement is the key to that. They're scapegoating. Somebody has to be the blame for where they are. And so separating out, having those boundaries that I mentioned before, is very, very important to you as a provider to be able to stay in a space where you can encourage your clients. Now, I'm on a mic, so maybe I shouldn't say it, but we always are in situations where you may have certain clients that when they're coming, it's like, right? And part of that is that's when you have to really think about where you are. Because if you have that moment, the encouragement is not there for you or for the client. Right? So a big part of that is recognizing how you're feeling, but also why you're feeling that way. Because a lot of times it's not about the client. Right? Transference? Right? So it's being mindful of where you are in this process. Okay, so I'm going to keep moving here so I can be mindful of the time. So here's some do's and don'ts to helping. Do encourage expression. Explore their strengths, and I'm going to talk about that when I look at some of the some spiritually based approaches, the strengths perspectives I'm going to look at. Be honest. That's the most important thing. That's the one thing that I learned in working in substance abuse treatment is I have to be honest with the clients because my expectation of them is I want them to be honest. I always say if I say anything to offend you, if even my movements offended you, I need you to tell me, right? You have to keep it honest. Most important, you have to check your own emotions. And oftentimes we find ourselves doing that regularly, checking your own emotions. I'm going to share a quick story with you. When I first started, I was working with a young lady who was 6 months pregnant. She was diagnosed with AIDS. She was an active crack user. And she came into my office because they wanted me to work with her in the context of getting her to minimize her use of crack. I struggled with her. I had to do this often. Supervision became very, very important for me because I myself had just had my own child. And so there was a lot of feelings that were happening because I was blaming her for bringing a child into the world who more than likely was going to have crack in his or her system. And so I had to step back. And I usually would step back prior to her coming into counseling to kind of just do a check-in with myself, check my emotions, check where I'm at, how am I feeling about her, reading over her information, what's happening in this particular moment so that I could help her. Because I wouldn't be encouraging if I didn't do that, right? What we don't want to do is we don't want to give our opinions. Sometimes that's hard. We don't want to be judgmental. And when you check in with your emotions, the likelihood of minimizing your judgment is there, right? Don't make excuses for your clients. You have to tell them what you see. Don't rationalize their behavior. So if someone comes in and you get a call and they've had a dirty urine, right? Don't rationalize. They're going to come in and give you all type of stories. That's when you have to be honest with them. Don't give your opinions about what's being said, but just keep those boundaries and stay honest, even if they're going to get upset about it. Don't take over your client's recovery. And that's something oftentimes we do subconsciously. We don't recognize that we're doing it because we want them to succeed. We really want them to succeed. We want them to be off of drugs. We want them to be productive people in society. And so one of the things that can happen is we start to take over by telling them what they're going to do and not having it as a reciprocal process where they are the ones who are making a decision about what they want to do and we're helping them through this journey. Okay, so with all of this, the whole approach to this is that we want to keep this client-centered, okay? And so when we think about a client-centered approach to working in substance abuse, one of the things we look at is that it builds on establishing a partnership between the provider and the client. So this is where we talk about working together, where decision making and responsibilities for care is shared. So if you think that there's something that would work for your client, how would you tell them that without taking over their recovery? What do you think you would say to them? No wrong answers.
I might say something like, can I make a suggestion?
Absolutely. Right? I would recommend. This sounds great. I think that's a good thing for you to do, but have you thought about this? Right? So it's a way that you present that where it becomes this reciprocal process in them not feeling like you're pushing things on them, right? Because they're more likely to be receptive to what you're giving them if they don't feel like they're being forced to take on certain things. The main focus is on building trust and open communication. And so these all kind of play into one another, because as you build that relationship, and that's a process that's ongoing throughout your whole experience with this particular client or clients that you work with, you want to recognize the strengths and capabilities of the clients, because oftentimes they're so broken that they don't see it themselves. And it could be something, I don't want to say as simple as, because it's not simple, but even making the decision to come into treatment, making the decision to stay in treatment. And if it's mandated, completing the process, recognizing how you change through the process are the things that are very important. You also want to allow space for the provider to guide. And so again, that's the guiding in the journey, looking at it as a journey, not being three steps ahead of your client, but actually either standing next to them in a metaphorical type of way, or being behind them and watching them as they move to kind of help them through that process. So when we use this client-centered approach, it allows the provider and the client to learn continuously and reinforcing the success throughout the entire process. The operative word here is reinforcing success. Oftentimes, our clients don't see their own success because they're walking through this with their eyes closed. They're walking through with their eyes closed, and all they see is the door. When is this going to be over? I'm in this treatment center. I don't want to be here. They have all these rules. I can't go out. You tell me when I could leave. You have to go with me when I'm going to the doctor. What is this? I don't want to do this. So they move through this process where, what do I need to do to just get out? That doesn't help the treatment process because it increases the risk of them falling right back into where they were, right? Okay. So when we look at spirituality in the recovery process, and so one of the things that's important, and I'm going to slow down a little bit because this, at least I have some time, I want to go over this case study as well, is that the spirituality in the recovery process reflects on the important aspect of human diversity. And let me explain to you what I mean by human diversity. As much as we are the same, we are very, very different. And what makes us different? So everyone, there's the values. I heard somebody say something here.
Temperament.
Your temperament.
Experiences.
Personality, experiences. That's the diversity, right? So two people, as it was said, I sat in on a workshop prior to, two people can experience the same exact thing, but how you process that is very different. And we learn a lot of it has to do with brain functioning.
Right.
But as a college professor and a therapist, a lot of that also has to do with when we think about how you grow up, right? You go from a psychodynamic perspective. All of that impacts on decisions that we make. Our experiences from when we were younger impacts the decisions that we make as we become older.